So, this idea that there are ways of being that are worth preserving or staying close to is such a useful idea. Now, if we cling to ways of being or expect to always be a certain way or resist it when it's going away, it just produces more suffering, more distress. But when there's something valuable, a valuable way of being, and then we don't necessarily hold on to it. Preserving it might mean that we don't easily go on to the next thing. We don't easily give in to the momentum of the mind to be distracted or preoccupied, or we don't just pop up out of our meditation seat and choose to rush to the next thing. The more we can accomplish, the better. And what a great retreat this is. There's lots of accomplishment times. I can clean my rooms and do my bills and just on and do all this stuff. And it's so exciting that you can, you know. And so you get up to start doing things, and it's maybe okay, but you've lost some way of being that was meaningful, satisfying, that was worth preserving. So, for example, it's worth preserving some feeling of freedom. If you're sitting and you're not preoccupied, not caught up in the usual things, and that's an unusual state for you, it might be more valuable to stay close to that and not get busy in a situation, in doing things where more likely than not you lose your mindfulness, and the old habits of clinging, of resisting, old ways of thinking pour back in. And if you continue for a long time that way, then it's be hard to let go. And you sit down to meditate, and you're kind of have some momentum of doing and busy and being distracted. So the idea of preserving something that's good and useful, and by not giving it away too easily and giving it up too easily. And then the other thing that occurs to me is that the meditation instructions are often given or can be heard as if this is exactly how you're supposed to be. And if you follow those instructions, you would just do them and not be distracted, not do anything else. You would just 100%, like the teacher says, stay with your breath, then that must mean I'm supposed to stay on the breath 100% of the time and not get distracted, not fall off it. Generally, it's better to think of meditation as not something you're going to perfect, or do perfectly, but something you're going to do just good enough, just well enough. Maybe you do it 60%, or I don't know what the right percentage of it is or how you say it, but maybe it's a little bit like doing a marathon rather than a sprint. You don't want to start doing a marathon with a sprint. That's not going to go. You start slowly. With meditation, it's easier to settle in and for it to be onward leading, if you can make room for not doing it perfectly. But you do it just well enough that there's a settling and an opening and a strengthening of the mindfulness. So it might mean that when you first sit down, that there's a lot of wandering off, and you've learned that being generous to yourself around that and not kind of riding yourself closely and being upset by that works better to settle in and relax. And after 5-10 minutes of settling, then you can kind of follow the breath more fully. But you had to give yourself permission at the beginning to not be, to be, not do it just perfectly and right. And in some ways, not doing meditation perfectly, I probably say it wrong, but it's kind of like the point. Because it's the beginning again that is such a powerful, important part of the practice. It's beginning again and experimenting and finding your way to notice that something just happened. I got distracted, got caught up in my thoughts or reactive to something. And now the practice begins. How do I relate to that in a relaxed way? How do I not get upset the fact that I was drifted off? And how do I, in a relaxed way, begin again? Begin again. And begin again. And so the very manner in which you would begin again is nice. You can't wait to begin again, because every time you begin again, you do it in such a nice, generous way. It's like every time you visit some person you know, the person greets you with such warmth and presence and attention. Like, you just feel like you're like the most important person in the world right then, because the person's always like there in such a nice way for you. What if you were that kind of person for the next moment? That you, how you begin again, how you greet, how you welcome, how you come back, is in some way just a nice act. I had to learn that. There was slow learning, because when I was newer in meditation, if I drifted off in thought and I noticed it, I would berate myself. I'd be ashamed of myself. I would hope no one noticed it, because it spoke really badly about me. And I would jerk my mind back. The jerking approach to mindfulness doesn't really work very well. Or sometimes I would pounce back at my breathing. And it was not pretty how I was. And in fact, it was actually more agitating than it was settling. So how I'm talking about this kind of, you have to find out how to make this work for you. Maybe I'm saying in the way that's not very appealing. But can you find a way to begin again that you appreciate? That you're happy to begin again? It doesn't feel like a duty. It doesn't, oh no, I got to do it again. What a drag. I have this, you know, I'm supposed to, I have to. I keep messing up. I know I'm supposed to do it again, but I can't really do it. It's so hard for me, and I will, but, you know, it's not really going to be so good today. So all these ways we do it, that doesn't, the whole inner psychophysical system, then is not, it doesn't, it's not happy and delighted to begin again. So your task is to be content to do your meditation imperfectly. But hopefully you do it just good enough that it develops and grows and unfolds and deepens over time. And one way to do that is to, whenever you need to begin again, that you've learned through experimentation how to begin again, that you just feel so, you're so lucky to do this. Wow, I get to do this again. What good luck, what good fortune. Because you found a soft way, a gentle way, a loving way, a smooth way, and just a delightful way to greet the next moment. Okay, breath, I'm here with you again. Okay, it's you and me again. You and, you know, you're talking to your breathing. It's you and me again, I'm here. As opposed to like taking the, you know, if you jerk yourself and penetrate that, I'm going to penetrate that breath and just stay there and, you know, I'm going to throttle the breath. I'm going to hold on to it for dear life and not let it go for one moment. Like, maybe that's fun for some people, but I think in the long term, that doesn't really allow for the kind of relaxed deepening that we want to have for this practice. And all this is keep in mind that we're also looking for or learning to recognize as we practice the ways in which we feel good, the ways in which there's some happiness, some sense of well-being, some sense of pleasure, something that feels nice. And I say it in all these ways so that you welcome, each of you will have a very different way of experiencing this, but something about them to recognize that. And for me, when I was my early years of meditation, I had zero idea that meditation could be pleasant or enjoyable. In fact, I probably had some idea in doing my Zen practice that you weren't supposed to enjoy it. You were supposed to, just be concentrated or just be present in some kind of, stoic way or something. And but then when I started doing Theravadin practices, I was surprised that states of joy and happiness were considered important and valuable as part of the practice. And I found that starting to pay attention to that allowed them to grow and develop, and that they were actually there much more than I realized. And that I had kind of blinders on because I didn't prioritize or I didn't give it any space. It's possible to over-prioritize happiness and well-being and be Pollyannish or expect it to always to be there. But what I'm suggesting today is it's useful to notice when it is there and to avail yourself of it when it does appear, even in small ways, not as a denial of other ways of feeling, but in the long term as support. There'll be times in practice where we really need to face very difficult phenomena, physical, emotional, mental, without that, the practice realistically facing what's deepest and darkest and difficult for us, then the practice isn't really being used for its full potential. But to have cultivated and developed a sense of well-being and confidence in the practice and maybe even some kind of delight in doing the practice, even when it's hard, that it'll be much easier to do this, the realistic work of really being present and holding what is difficult. So those are my thoughts for today. And so we'll take a break. I have one announcement, and that is that today at 6 o'clock, 6 p.m., there's going to be a optional meeting, sometimes called an affinity group, for people who are LGBTQ plus or binary or questioning or in that broad family of human beings. That if you want to meet with Bruni at 6 o'clock, and that'll be in Bruni's practice discussion group. And I think there's an announcement now on the instruction page that if you belong to that broad category of people, I think Bruni will be very happy to see you and talk about Dharma or practice or whatever seems useful at this point. And thank you very much. And we'll begin again here with the next sitting at 2 o'clock. Thank you.